All right, let's bring our meeting to order. This is the January 28, 2019. That's coming around already. We're almost done with the month. Meeting the Public Safety Advisory Board. We have an agenda. And has everyone had a chance to review that?
And can we do introductions? Point of order, sir?
That's true. It does say that. I can't even see, and it's right in front of me. We've got some new faces in here, so we'll start some introductions. I'm Tom Friedland. I'm the current chair of the Public Safety Advisory Board, and to my left is Captain.
I'm Captain Peter Mahuna with the Westland Police Department. I will be the dedicated liaison for the Public Safety Advisory Board.
Excellent.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Replace Lieutenant Mike Stradley, who's now moved on.
Stephen Myers, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue.
Michael McGrath, board member.
Allison Woods, I'm a nursing student at OHSU working on a BSN program, and we're attending as part of a public health awareness for the city of Westland.
I'm Jenna Wertham, and I'm doing the same thing.
How do you spell your last name?
W-E-R-T-H-E-I-M.
Did you get the other one?
Richard Sacklick, City Council Liaison.
Judy Wickman, Board Member.
Chris Duncan, Board Member, Recording Secretary.
Get everybody? Okay. Now, if you had an opportunity to review the agenda, does anyone have move to accept?
Second.
Nice. I can't move. You have.
Oh, I move.
Okay. Is there
second.
A second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, moving on. We have minutes from our last meeting. Has it been 2 months? I guess so. November 26, 2018. If you've had an opportunity to review, is there any changes, amendments, deletions, corrections? And if not, does somebody wish to move to accept?
I move to accept.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Three down. I brought this up at the November meeting, primarily so it would be at the top of our agenda today. We have a new year, and with that, we need to select new officers representing the Public Safety Board. We generally have a chair, a vice chair, and at the moment we have a Shanghai secretary who has been doing a very good job for us in the interim since we lost our high school student who was more than willing to take on the obligation. So, with that, any comments or suggestions or motions or whatever regarding positions for board?
Just one question. Are appointments completed yet?
That's what I was going to say. So I would suggest you table this till next month.
Yeah.
We're planning on making the appointments this Monday the 4th, next Monday. So since there's three openings for this week, it probably makes sense to do that.
Well, then, as Chris runs off, I guess I've been involuntarily extended 1 month. We will table the issue regarding board officers for the board till next month's meeting, which brings us to our next item on disaster preparedness. And first area on that is on Map Your Neighborhood.
And
does Chris know all this so she can?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm doing most of it anyway.
So. Okay. But, I mean, she's got to take notes.
Oh, that's true. I'll fill her in.
Okay.
There's two large groups that said they wanted to do something in January, February, but they haven't got it together yet. So one is the Arbor Cove group, and they're assigning these, they call them sub-captains because there's 72 people.
Before we get into a lot of detail on that, for the benefit of our two visitors.
Oh.
could you explain the MAP, your neighborhood program or concept? Because otherwise they won't have anything to put in their little report that they're putting on, because they'll wonder, what the heck is this?
Okay. Have either one of you heard of the generic MAP Your Neighborhood, which where it's not native to just West Lynn? It's the program of getting neighbors to get together and get a game plan so that after a disaster they can all help each other and know who has what skills. So what we've been doing in West Lynn for several years, Grant Oaks and can't remember his name.
Denny.
Denny. Can't remember his last name. Just say Grand Oaks. Started the program here, and they've got one in I think Tigard, and there's one in Vancouver and Portland. They're in various places, but basically, it's to get people to understand that after some major disaster, whatever that might be, not just earthquakes, that our first responders are going to be very busy with the macro picture, and they can't deal with the micro picture.
Yeah.
So neighbors have to get together. Make sure each other's okay and help each other out. And if services are out, just do what they can to help each other. And we generally do 10 to 15 families, contiguous families at a time. And it's really hard to break them up. You can't just say, well, I live in a neighborhood that doesn't have sidewalks and streets that are at right angles. But right. you just say, pick 10 to 15 families and get together and have this meeting, which we conduct, and it takes an hour to an hour and a half. And at the end of that meeting and a workbook, they have a game plan of what to do immediately following a disaster after they've checked on their own household.
Mm-hmm.
A meeting place that they've agreed upon to get together, who has what tools, maybe chainsaws and so forth, who has what skills, maybe doing triage or helping with children or whatever, so that they can really be as self-sufficient as possible. And the other part of the meetings are generally dedicated to helping people understand what supplies they might start gathering if they haven't already in the way of not just food and water, first aid, but all the other things that you might need to think about if you aren't going to have running water or flushing toilets for, could be, months. So we go through this in as much detail as possible, and oftentimes people will stay after these meetings to just keep asking questions.
Yeah.
So we have a big map of where we've done this in West Lynn, and we're trying to just permeate the whole city.
I was going to say, so are you going neighborhood, like broad neighborhood, like Willamette neighborhood,
Tanner Bay? Not association one.
Just like...
And that's just kind of the purpose of that program, map your neighborhood. What do you perceive to be your neighborhood?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and then draw your own lines.
Get in contact with you.
Yeah, and I've spoken to all the presidents of all the neighborhood associations. Yeah. They get together once a month. So I've spoken to them. They're all very aware of it.
Yeah.
And they're all trying to encourage people to step up and host, because all you really need to do is host is open your house and put a bunch of chairs up. You know?
Yeah.
They don't have to do much else. We supply everything.
Great.
So the map, when you look at it, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
It's just nothing in particular about this neighborhood has been completely saturated. It's just whoever's willing to do it. And we try to get the word out there. I think we're going to do a little more of, Chris and I were talking about next door. You know, we need to get more messages out there, you know, that this is available and it's very effective.
Yeah.
So
that would be really helpful. I use that app all the time, and I actually do look for all of the emergency services updates on there for things that are going on traffic-wise or...
Yeah.
I don't know if the fire department does very much on there, but I do see a lot from the West Lynn Police.
No, not as much. We've had a little bit of a challenge in how to get on each account for each neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
A little different if you're a regional provider, but...
It is.
So we've been testing it to basically see... What's the viability for us?
Yeah.
We had one of our members join us here during the discussion. If you'd be kind enough to introduce for everybody.
I'm Mark Gilbert. I'm a member of the committee.
Was there anything else on Map Your Neighborhood other than the two groups?
We have probably about 100 homes interested right now. They just are trying to figure out who's going to break up into what groups, who's going to actually see if they can open their house or coerce neighbors who have a bigger house like I did into doing this. So there's always an interest, and it flares up a little more during, you know, emergency fairs and things like that. But there's enough in the papers and enough, unfortunately, tragedies all over the world and the fires on the West Coast and so forth that it gets people's attention and they say, yeah, I really ought to do something.
Yeah.
Jumping from they really ought to do it to actually setting a date is our big challenge.
Yeah.
So.
I think the other thing that we see with turnout is follow-up. And I'm not sure if Nextdoor really has the ability for you to trigger reminders to say, it's 24 hours out from the meeting. Don't forget to come on out for the meeting, unless you're going to have a full-time media person basically posting those reminder notices out there. There are other apps out there that have that kind of functionality. Just think of your massage place that has the ability to say, reminder of your appointment.
Yeah.
It forwards those appointments out of their calendar out into the... So I'm sure there are other software options for us to look into that wouldn't necessarily commit us to one social media structure.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't thinking of just the only one. And I was actually seeing Nextdoor as simply getting the word out that there is a program and here's our address.
Right.
And just people that are interested will contact us, and then we'll follow up with them. And I can do reminders of, you know, have you, it's been a month and a half, have you gotten these people together yet? Oh, yeah, I'm almost finished, that kind of thing. So I see that as more of an awareness kind of an app versus a follow-up kind of app. But do you have anything to add, Chris?
No, I think that that's pretty much covers it.
She doesn't want to write any more than she has.
Enjoy.
Do you have any more resource needs?
No. At the moment, no. We're doing well on that.
Okay.
Got
just let me know if you need pronouncements.
Giant stack of stuff in my study.
Was there anything else in the venue of preparedness, other programs or events that we are aware of?
Well, there was the CERT. Tiger did a CERT presentation at the, I think it was for the Neighborhood Association presidents, and talked about the CERT program, which was
somebody,
is something.
Did we have somebody there?
Yeah, I couldn't go. Did you?
I wasn't able to that night, too. And
Mike,
it really kind of, because that's one thing, you know, it's all around us is the CERT training, but not right here.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have to piggyback onto some other community, which then means the logistics and time to get that. You know, we would really like to.
Oh, can you explain to them the CERT that program? Somebody?
It's
like
community emergency community emergency response training, isn't it? Isn't that what CERT
stands for? As opposed
to
the Map Your Neighborhood, where you are creating a group that is self-sustaining, the CERT team is more of a response from the community to the issue in lieu of the traditional first responders. So you develop teams that are able to respond and do some very limited rescue or basic first aid or contact to see if people are in need of help.
It's more in-depth.
There's a level of qualification. It's volunteers. It's a great program that requires a lot of tending to and making sure that there's somebody assigned to it for management, which is, for instance, you have an emergency manager at Tiger that's done a great job investing in the program, which is important. A lot of times they fall off to some degree because nobody's there to really invest and manage it.
And you've got to keep the interest up and the skills up at the same time, because just like anything else, it'll wane if it isn't reinforced or trained.
But I do have a question along those lines. I checked with I believe his title is Assistant City Manager Dylan Digby.
Assistant
to the city manager. That's his title, right?
Yeah.
About a month ago, and asked if the city had appointed an emergency manager yet, and he said, as of that time, no. Does anybody know the status? Do we have applications in the hopper, or
the last thing I heard, because I forgot where it came up, but we have an emergency operations plan that the previous Captain Henley presented to the council in September 2017, and he was the commander at the time, and so since he left, I don't think a new one has been done, and so Chief Kruger recently said he's in the works of trying to identify or will identify somebody for that position, and the good part of that I was enthused about when Captain Henley presented to us, we were planning to do mock emergencies where I suggested calling everybody, the electeds, because the electeds are part of the response, at 2 a.m. and have us go do what we need to do, basically, and maybe do like twice a year so that we are familiar with exactly what we need to do. And to add to it, even though it's part of the next thing, we're in the process of doing our 2019 goals. We just had our goal setting last week. And all five of us have put emergency preparedness at the very, very, near the very, very top. So we're going to put more emphasis on it this year and we'll finish our goals probably next week. And so there'll be more emphasis on it. And so part of it will be having another new commander, basically.
Okay.
Going from there. So we all recognize that, you know, it's probably one of the best things we can do in our city, because tomorrow we could have, you know, a major event, and what do?
Great.
You know, we go look here, who does this, who does what, you know, yeah. So it's key.
Just
yes.
One other issue.
Chris.
I continue to hear from my many contacts in Alaska, including my sister, who's been very hard hit by the Alaska quake in December. She is one of those that's facing financial ruin because she was unfortunate enough to live in a condo that suffered a great deal of damage. And it's been interesting to have learned that there is an explicit exclusion to common interest ownership property in the FEMA statutes.
Great.
I mean, it's not even regulations, it's a statutory exclusion. So if you are unfortunate enough to live in a place that has a wall that cracked that is responsible by homeowners, everyone will be on the hook for that damage. And so, and there is no relief that a private homeowner might get. So I thought that was an interesting revelation that we, having just had our last meeting at Hidden Springs.
Yeah. We gave a mapping neighborhood to a large group of homeowners in the Hidden Springs Condominium Association.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's a different world than individual homeowners. And they were wanting to really be on top of it. And I got to say, they are more on top of it than a lot of people in West Lynn. So kudos to them.
They really were. Yeah. Yeah, so that's something that we'll kind of, if we present to places like that again, to kind of double-check their reserves.
Yeah. I do think we have a lot of disparate groups interested in doing things, but we do need some cohesiveness and pulling this all together so, like, we're all on the same team and we're all reading the same manual, in, so to speak, mm-hmm. and that we all know what we're going to do when XYZ hits. And I don't feel like we have that. I feel a little fractured. I know we have great first responders, but they're going to be so busy with the big stuff. I'm just a little concerned that we don't have enough of a game plan. And, you know, I'm an amateur. I'm just a homeowner and a volunteer, but it kind of concerns me when I hear people say, well, who am I supposed to contact? And I say, well, you don't call 911 because they're going to be a little busy. Well, then what am I supposed to do? Well, you get trained and help your neighbors and do the best you can. Well, who's looking at the big picture? I'm not quite sure.
would the committee be interested in seeing, if they haven't already, seeing the huge document? It's like 500 pages, but the Emergency Operations Plan, the EOP.
I looked at it online and I skimmed.
Okay. I honestly
did not
read it. I can send
a copy
to everybody if you wanted, or to the group, or, it's a lot to absorb because there's a lot of stuff in there. You know, and there's things about what happens.
Who's the incident command?
Well, we were talking about that, I think, right before you came in. Chief Kruger's in the process of identifying somebody. It was Chief Henley. I mean, Captain Henley.
But see, at the last meeting that Chief Kruger attended, he said there's some discussion about it moving out of the police department.
Yes.
And moving to another
public works.
That thing. Uh-huh. I couldn't remember what he said.
Right.
Yeah. Do you have any update about that?
Nothing more than that they were in discussions with Lance Calvert from Public Works. To take that over.
Thank you.
Okay. Be a part of that, but
that's
by no means set in stone yet. I have been doing some preliminary digging into where the West Lynn Police Department stands as far as being what they call NIMS compliant, National Incident Management Systems compliant. And with all the turnover that we've had, we are not. And so I'm working on a document that, I don't know what it's called, it's like our change document to get into substantial compliance with the federal government and how to do that. I got to get people to trainings. We got to participate in tabletop exercises, which I've been in touch with Clackamas County and their emergency preparedness people have offered. They're doing four within the next 6 months, I believe, that they've invited us to be a part of. So I'm just kind of scratching the surface with that.
So. In that emergency operations plan, the police department here is designated the primary mm-hmm. location, and City Hall is the secondary location for people to go do for emergency service. So, like, if I get called in the middle of the night, I'd probably go up to City Hall or down here because I'm kind of in between both of them, whichever one I can get to, you know, as part of the command. So,
we also just worked on a big funding project to get the generator upgraded so we can run the entire building. Currently, it doesn't have enough power to run the whole place. If it was a true emergency operation center for a long period of time, it would not handle okay. that.
So you're, and that's being financially yeah. saved up for?
Yeah. we're all returning cans and bottles. we're up to about $7 now.
It's been part of our whole discussion on the general obligation bond that just passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, originally when we passed it, there was no discussion for this emergency generator for the police station. It kind of came up. That's where I found out, where I reviewed the EOP, that the police station is the primary. So, of course, it needs it.
Yeah.
You know, it will get funded. It's how it gets funded, we're not exactly sure yet, whether it's through the GO bond or through the normal budgeting process that we're coming up upon. But, you know, the council's pretty well agreed that, yeah, we need to have that. You know, yeah. If this is the primary,
this is
it makes sense.
This is EOC, we're in it.
Yeah, okay. You deserve it.
Anything else on the disasters that could befall us? If not, the next item is our teen driver safety program. I don't know if everyone received the email from the city with some updated web pages about 2 weeks ago, which had a link to our particular web page on the teen driver safety program through Street Survival. It's set up as an online application for the Westland students that meet the qualifications, whether they're at Westland High or at another high school. They are eligible as long as they are a resident. The next class is coming up in March. We went live, about a week and a half ago. We've got two applications that are already in. We've still got about another 3 weeks open on the application process. We've asked the applicants to give in 500 words or less what they hope to gain out of this, how they can help teen driving in West Lynn. We have three slots currently reserved in the one-day class, and I was trying to get down to the Youth Advisory Council meeting last week and a half ago, whatever day that was, and I could not get out in time to get through traffic before they finished. However, they did get an opportunity to discuss it. The web page was available at that time. They were in the process of putting notification through the school's announcing system, their bulletin program that they update every day. So we'll see what transpires on that. There is some fair support on it. Hopefully we will get a few more applicants that are interested in attending the class. The class for our two visitors is a mixture of classroom and behind the wheel that is coordinated out at PIR, Portland International Raceway, through the BMW Club of America and the Sports Car Club of America. And they have a one-day program subsidized. It's $95 a day per student. And with that behind the wheel, they go through hazardous driving situations, a skid pan, collision avoidance, emergency braking, all in a controlled setting. And the students come out of it, you know, surprised as to how much they learned or how much fun they had learning it. But they alternate between, you know, split class of being in the classroom and behind the wheel for about 2 hours each session and go throughout the day. And several years ago, we started putting a sponsorship for a number of students to attend that. We were trying to make it, you know, more of a process as opposed to just sort of a random lottery. And at least this time, we've got them giving us a brief little essay.
And why is it only? I'm sorry, I guess this is probably a stupid question, but why is it only 3 students?
Well, they have a potential of 30 spots per class. We have limited funds that are available that have been donated. And the idea, in part, is to have the students that attend it instill others to become interested in it and sign up on their own or with the students that are attending. The whole all we want to do is create a cadre of informed students.
So it's not that only three students get a scholarship, there's three students that can get a scholarship.
This is a roving program that comes to the Portland metro area twice a year. So we're trying always to make sure that at least three from West Lynn are part of those classes.
Speaking of that, so we transferred the money from the police fund to the sports club. Did they give us an accounting of, and who did they give an accounting to say, you've used X number of dollars, and this is how many more scholarships you could afford based on our current rate?
We haven't had any activity to do that at this point. The dollar amount was transferred over.
This year.
And we will, you know, we'll spend, what, just under $300 for the March class. And I believe Karen will give us an accounting after we've paid the tuition costs, had the attendees go through the program, and we'll see where the remaining amount is.
So if we're at about $300 per every 6 months, so we have about 18 months of funding for scholarship at this point. So hopefully we'll can kind of get the word out there about finding additional sponsors for the scholarships.
I think the fact that we had a pretty decent web presentation on it, that we can direct some people to that and maybe encourage some donations for that moving forward. It's a lot easier when you've got something to point to.
Right.
I would think some of the really large auto dealerships and
We haven't really approached anyone on it for the simple reason that we really didn't have anything to point to. I think now we do.
We should probably also tap into the insurance agents. There's a lot of them in the city of West Lynn that, you know, have an interest in this, and they're tied to the community pretty well. So I think that's another place to go with it. But as you say, putting together the materials to show this is how the program's operated so far, why don't you folks get lined up? That'd be a good thing for us to take on as maybe one of our goals for, you know, we're supposed to put goals before the city about what we'd like to do, see the scholarship become perpetually self-funding.
I know that was part of our goals we submitted, not necessarily that perpetuality of it, but or perpetuity of it, but we did want to continue the effort, and that was part of it. How we manage that will be up to us moving forward, and that's coming up in our next topic.
Is this being advertised at the Time West Lynn High School at all?
Yes,
okay.
Through their bulletin. I don't know what they call it, but it's... when I was in high school, eons ago, there was usually like a newsletter or some announcement that was done in homeroom. I know there is something that is done every day or every other day that they're in class, and that's part of the notification process, and the Youth Advisory Council is actively promoting it within the high school and other youth venues throughout the area.
I think Chief Kruger was also saying that the school resource officer was also a source of information to the students to say, hey, if this is something you're interested in, there is a program, take a look on the city website.
He has been active in helping us select the people prior to this year's cycle when we were just trying to get people to just throw their name in for interest in it. But I think this time, because we're also asking for, you know, contact parental information, that we're going to have probably a little better response when we do make the selection. It's been, you know, there was one person that we spent all summer trying to get in touch with who had been selected, and that by the time we got a hold of them in September, they didn't want to go to the class. So we do the best we can. Anything else on the teen driver safety program and scholarship?
For businesses who may want to donate, is this a 501(c)?
It is a 501(c). The specific local sports car club and the parent organization are a 501(c), so the donation would be done to the organization. I'd have to get you the specific name and contact person, but they would have the tax write-off on it that could be designated specifically for the Westland program. I hadn't gotten that far with it yet because we have, you know, literally this has come together in the last 2 months when we haven't been meeting. I was really impressed when we saw the webpage and the link with everything else on it. So, brings us to new business, and the item that I've got on here is, what do we want to address this coming year? As a board, we have, this last year we discussed or had presentations on mental health, on FirstNet, and there are some interests within the group as far as particular topics, and I'd like to know what we should be looking for to fill out our program. Ideas? Thoughts?
I really like the idea of exploring mental health and just helping the citizens in our city that way.
Okay. Any other areas of interest or concern? We've had, you know, a fair amount of information last year on what really sounds mundane, but issues as far as width of streets, but how that impacts emergency response to certain neighborhoods, and how to, you know, control speed in certain areas and not impede responses because of, you know, trying to put speed bumps or something in there. So we've had some rather unusual discussions that would not seem to be interesting, but have been very enlightening and very informative and important to the community to understand. So any areas that you guys would have besides maybe something on disaster preparedness that's unique to what we've already done? And if you don't come up with anything tonight, I've got email available, so you can send me your thoughts as the weeks progress, since we have a short turnaround time, I guess, till our next meeting, with the February being as short as it is. So we'll be meeting again probably in 4 weeks.
I mean, one of the things that I am continually monitoring is perception, you know, looking at the chatter on Nextdoor, and kind of looking at what the expectations are of the community, of its
versus of reality, its, of what they can do,
of what they can do, and, you know, if exploring if there is a role for, you know, board members, because as I see this, we're both the ear to listen out. We're extra ears in the community, mm-hmm. that are, you know, a little more detached, but we're ears to on both sides of the roles.
Well, we serve as a liaison.
As a liaison, exactly. And you know, it's in this time of tension and polarization, I think that it's, that role becomes ever more important. You know, this is not a community where you see, I mean, much of what you see in the police blotter is, you know, somebody, children were shooting off firecrackers and, you know, not so many of the issues that one might see. But nevertheless, I think that there is a role for us as liaison members, and I don't know whether that's, you know, just creating a little part on the agenda of heard on the street or what, and sometimes there's, you know, nothing out there, but sometimes there is buzz, mm-hmm. and I think that this is a good place for reality checks about whether that buzz is really warranted or not. Mm-hmm. So it's just something that I've been sort of mulling, mm-hmm. in my mind as a possibility, but I can't say specifically.
It's an idea that has not fully formed.
Fully formed, but I think that,
well,
that
there's some substance there to work with.
There could be, you know, just
yes.
I have a partially formed idea, too. I talk to a lot of people because I'm not exactly shy. And there's so many people that are so angry about the development going on in Westland, and they part of their brain goes, yeah, we know if we're going to protect our country spaces, our beautiful natural scenery, then we have to figure out how you're going to do infrastructure and make it work. But what a lot of people are angry about is contractors, I'm getting to the point of safety here, contractors that are getting maybe around some of the rules and maybe ignoring things and paying fines later. But the concern is, even in my own neighborhood, is, oh my gosh, there is not enough room in the street for people to park there and for fire trucks to get through. And they're just going, what if we need to have the fire department get to our house and somebody's giving a party and there's this much room, literally, some of these there's not enough room because they're not following the rules of how much, I don't know what the, was it right of way, is that the word? The width of the street, whatever's allocated for vehicles to get through. And I'm in an older neighborhood in Robin Wood, and it, you know, was a lot of my immediate neighborhood was built in the 50s, and there's a lot of no sidewalks and a lot of discussion over that. But I was just thinking, some neighbors were at a party the other day, and they were going, wait a minute, these four new houses here and the 10 they're going to build over on this other side here, is there going to be room for vehicles to get through? And they're concerned. They have families. They don't want their house to burn down because the vehicles can't get through. So that's one thing that causes a lot of very quick anger when people start talking about that amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. And although we may have no influence over that, it's certainly our ears are to the ground, and maybe we can tell appropriate people at City Hall to just say, hey, could you please make sure that this contractor, even though he or she has been doing this for 30 years, is really playing by the rules to make sure that there is a safety net here. That's just something people get very twitchy about.
If I can add in.
Please.
Yeah, the Planning Commission's already looking at that. We've had a number of different things, and so I believe it's their intention to try to change the 24-foot to basically make it not available anymore, unless maybe by exception, in a place that wouldn't be impacted where these kinds of problems wouldn't happen. Let me read you it's a little short paragraph as to what we're working on for our goals, mm-hmm. because this plays right into it, along with a bunch of the things you said, where you folks could, if you chose to, you could get involved in that, but you'd be supporting a council goal, however we end up defining it, because it'll get wordsmithed a little bit depending, but prioritize disaster preparedness activities within the city in accordance with budgetary considerations and the city's approved emergency preparedness plan, natural hazards mitigation plan, debris management plan, and other approved master plans. This includes training activities and fully funding generators and other emergency needs for the police station and library. Create a disaster preparedness task force to work on emergency planning, community outreach, and training, and to explore the possibility of a community emergency response team circuit program.
Sure.
And so street widths are a prime example.
Right.
Mark brought it to, there's an area in Satteris Street where somebody had a medical emergency and they couldn't get in.
Right.
Stephens. Familiar with that because he got somehow involved in that. So that could all be part of, depending what you want to put together as a plan that would support, you know, whatever the final goal is, but it'll be something along those lines.
Okay.
Yeah, in order to have a street that meets the requirement of parking on both sides of the street and still be able to get the fire department's trucks through, you have to have the 32-foot wide street. 28 is kind of an intermediary with parking on one side, but 24 feet, like Saturn, was no parking on the street. The signs somehow disappeared between the time the builder finished the homes and the time the people bought the homes. And so therefore, the missing signs, which I've seen emails about this discussion, where the signs go, somebody supposedly has pictures of the signs being there and then they're gone. So the people that bought all those very expensive homes didn't know they were on a no parking on the street.
Exactly.
And that's basically what your neighborhood is looking at becoming.
I bet you they're not telling these people.
It's the same thing. So, and this is really both as our council representative speaks to, it's the Planning Commission, but it's also, who's the other?
Traffic safety.
Yeah, and it's also the fire...
Marshal.
Thank you. The fire marshal weighs in on, thank you. After 55, the memory is fire marshal weighs in on this as well.
Okay.
It's important stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see their own or their neighbor's house burned down because the trucks can't get through.
Why don't we try and flesh together maybe more than just a half a thought in the next few weeks and see if we can maybe get some concepts together that we'll present to the group itself, next meeting, meeting after that, and see in the meantime whether or not we can get maybe a presentation or two that does address some of these things moving forward.
Can I make a suggestion?
No.
If it's possible, could we also tap into the existing structure of the Neighborhood Association presidents to see if any of them have had any ideas on the topic of public safety or complaints, concerns addressed to them, that maybe this would be a format for us to broaden our appeal and our outreach to them and kind of create that two-way pathway of information sharing. One of the examples that I had at the Hidden Springs Neighbor Association meeting at the new Station 55 was fire mitigation, people being very concerned in the Hidden Springs because there's that 15 or 20 acre green space which is horrendously overgrown with English ivy and blackberries, Himalayan blackberry, and so there's opportunities there for a lot of partnership. The Tualatin Valley Fire has said, we'll talk to you about what you need to be thinking about to create barriers, solve in Portland, we'll bring you resources to organize, to get out there and do some invasive species mitigation, which would reduce the fire burden, the natural things that need to be mitigated. And then these are hillsides that are not going to be amenable to a fire truck or a police car at all. So really people on the ground who live in that neighborhood would be motivated, I would hope, to be involved. So you have a natural built volunteer base, organizational structure through SOLVE, consultation through the fire department. So you've got some partners already kind of lined up.
Mm-hmm.
If we decide to say, hey, let's help get this in front of like monthly SOLVE, like you do in Portland, where they do a monthly mitigation of invasive species, but you're also reducing the fire burden out there. And that stimulated that was a paradise fire, because to me, we're a fire sitting on a hillside waiting to happen. When you go out there, I go, the trail's right behind my house. You're just waiting for that to just go.
Yeah, okay. We just met with Savannah Oaks on January, because they had some concerns around their area. Talked about everything they could do to create defensible space and then also some partnership and opportunity. And wildfire awareness. So we've done some signage and some things for people to be aware of what dangers are out there and how they could potentially be an ignition source by their carelessness.
So the officers of the Hidden Springs Neighbor Association said this is something they've heard a lot of interest from our neighbor association.
Okay.
So that's why I thought of reaching out to the other presidents of the neighbor association.
Okay.
So it's also our intention when we're done with the goals in the next 2 weeks. I don't know exactly how we've done it in the past. I don't recall whether we've just posted them on the website and people just go and choose to look at it. But my intention is to, once we close on them, specifically email all 75 to 80 citizen advisory group volunteers the specific ones and say, here's the goals. And so, like, you people in this group will see which ones apply to you folks, so that you can start your ideas and work towards that, instead of assuming that everyone's going to go to the site and start to look at it. That would be a quicker way, and would be a quick email. So
that
would be my intention for best communication to you folks.
That's good.
Okay. Staff updates. Captain, you have anything from the police department to share?
We interviewed 36 people in the last month, basically, and have whittled that down to 7 people who are in background with us right now.
And this is for?
To fill the 3 vacancies.
Okay.
As you know, not everybody passes background.
Mm-hmm.
So, we had one pass today, background today, so we're sending that person off to medical and psych probably next week. So we're hoping that we can't hire them until we get confirmed seats in the academy for them. And so I think the next academy opening was already into either March or April, because they missed one last year, so everybody's playing catch up. So we're hoping to have all 3 of our people in one of those academies to get them up and running. We just sent people to a traffic collision school, so we'll be able to be a part of the Clackamas County Fatal Response Team. I'm not sure what their acronym is, CRAFT or something like that, Accident Reconstruction Team. So we're going to have committed to sending people to that. We have reinvigorated our relationship with the Major County, Clackamas County Major Crimes Team. And so every time anything happens big in the entire county, our detective is now a resource for them, and our evidence technician is a resource for them. So we've been called to go to everything, and the officer involved shootings like that in the last probably 6-8 weeks. So that's super exciting. See what else we got. We are our code enforcement officer is currently under a medical deal right now. She hopes to return to work in about a month after she heals up. So our code enforcement has shifted to the line officer. So that's a slower response there because that's not something they do on a daily basis. And we're moving to try and hire. The full-time person is going to retire in July anyway, so we're trying to move forward with hiring her replacement quicker. And so we're working on that process now. About it.
Okay. Stefan, what's with the TVFNR this week?
Leadership-wise, we have some transition going on. Our board selected a new fire chief as our current fire chief, Mike Dyke, announced he was going to be retiring come July 1st. So they selected Derek Weiss, who's going to be our new fire chief. He's been with us for a long time, and he was the assistant chief, so moving up. But a great gentleman, and so we're looking forward to, they're going to have a nice little overlap time between now and July 1st to catch him up and get up to speed. At the same time, we've also got our chief financial officer, who's been wonderful and steering us through many things and taking care of the organization. And she's going to be retiring too, so that position right now is out for recruitment. More specifically here, I did meet, as we were talking about, the Neighborhood Association presidents in December, met with them to talk a little bit about what was going on with the fire department, also just reiterate that we're available to be at their Neighborhood Association meetings to talk about local emergency calls that are happening in their area, talk about safety messages, and share data of what's happening locally with them. So a lot of neighborhood associations takes up on my invite, but just want to make sure that all of them knew. Then, as is required by statute, every 5 years we have to go out for a renewal of our local option levy, and that's going to be happening in May. Expect in May to see TVFNR on the ballot. The local option levy is currently at 45 cents per thousand of assessed value. That's going to stay, so it's a renewal, not an increase. Again, wanted you to be aware, or the first to know, that that's going to be on there. And then the final one is, next month is Heart Month. I don't know if you guys are aware, but it's a big month for us. We've put a lot of work into saving people from cardiac arrest, whether it's the training, our verified responder program, Pulse Point that we've shared here at the meeting, but we're seeing increased survivability for a multitude of reasons, and we're really excited about that. So one of the fun jobs I have when I'm not joining you is to sometimes reunite our crews with people that they've saved. So we actually just had a recent one where my chief was at a soccer game, got dinged on, there was a CPR that was needed at a soccer field next door. So actually, if you watch some of the news this evening, they were interviewed just today, they share that story of, again, just, he had an AED in the car, so all of a sudden that was made available to a cardiac emergency, and that's something we care about a lot. Also a big partner in that is our police department and law enforcement. They're faster, we hate to admit it, but they're faster at getting there than we are because they're well-placed and out in the community. So now with them having AEDs and training, it's just a great opportunity to get hands on a chest quicker and get electricity when needed. So that's kind of the big ones.
What's ADD stand for?
Automatic External Defibrillator.
AED.
AED, okay.
Yeah.
So we also, by the way, if you know of anybody that has the requirement of an AED, we do have a program in which community centers or any places where lots of people gather, and the need for having an AED there would help increase safety. We do have a grant program that can help provide AEDs, or at least give a discount for the purchase of one.
Do most of the schools have one?
Yeah.
Because I know I've seen the one at the library, but I was assuming schools would have one.
Yeah, it's actually a good test. When you walk into a large gathering trying to figure out where is the AED, where's the fire extinguisher, they're there, but sometimes we overlook them. And then secondly, PulsePoint has an AED as a part of their app, Finder. So actually I can see where AEDs are near me. And if there's one that I see that's not on there, I can actually submit it. And then our EMS office then goes out to verify that and make sure it's in the system. So that way, if I'm responding to an emergency, I can find out that, hey, there's an AED at this location or one nearby that somebody could go grab.
Are they like in a big red box, or is it something real obvious that you know what it is? Or
at the schools, at most community centers, they put them on an alarm so that when you grab them, everybody notices an emergency is taking place. And then, yeah, the box is usually smaller, depending if it's Philips or a Zoll model. But sometimes they're just mounted on the wall. It depends on what the budget is for each person that's placing it at their facility. Mm-hmm.
You guys still using Philips?
Yeah. Well, we know.
Because they're going out of, they left that product line.
Yeah.
They're not supporting AED and defibrillators anymore.
The EMS one or the more commercial?
The hospital-based ones and the clinic-based ones, they no longer support it, so we moved to Zoll.
Okay. I can't remember. The ones that we have been issued actually came from Philips. So I don't know the future on those ones,
from Philips.
Good enough.
They had a problem with getting the chips in it to keep it going. Okay. So we had interruptions on deliveries. That's why we moved to Seoul.
Thanks for the intel.
The news station has a community room, right?
It does.
Yeah. And is there parking adequate for if we wanted to hold one of our meetings later this year there?
Absolutely.
The parking exceeds the allowed number of people to be in the room.
Mm. Yeah.
We had 40 people in a room that's only supposed to hold 20. Don't tell the marshal.
Yeah.
plenty of parking.
Okay. Well, I think we got, less than a dozen, so...
Just let me know.
Maybe later this spring, once we're sure that we're not going to have to contend with goofy weather.
And if you know a general community group that needs to use it, you can just go on tvfnr.com, look up Station 55 Community Room, and there's a list that you can just reserve it.
Okay.
You can go in there and select the date.
That sound good for everybody?
Interesting. Sure.
Maybe con them into a tour of the new station.
We can definitely do that.
You didn't go to the open house?
No, I was out of town
the ladder,
that day.
The ladder truck.
I think it opened when we were on vacation.
Mm. It was cool. It was well attended.
I did have one more safety question.
Sure.
We have had presentations as a committee about how to do the DWI, where it's not alcohol, but it's marijuana related. And there's been some more publications in the medical literature about measuring the level of not THC per se, but actual blood level, and that it associates very closely with some of the intoxication levels that some states are moving down to. Any kind of update about, because some of the officers here had been being trained on how to do a DWI when you're doing a driving while intoxicated?
I think we currently have two officers that are DRE trained, drug recognition experts. I don't know how they go after marijuana now with the changes, because I know what you're talking about. There's some differences in opinion as to what you can actually recognize in somebody. So I can certainly ask them and have them maybe come and give us a presentation.
So maybe a DRE-type presentation on...
We had one of those once before. I thought it was very helpful. And it's definitely more and more in the community. Patients, I can't get to sleep because they're so high all the time. They've got to be driving and intoxicated, sort of driving to their limits. So,
well, we have two members of the community. Do you guys have anything you'd like to put up as a comment? Did you get what you needed for your assignment?
Well, I think so. We're supposed to focus on health-related items. There are some health-related items here. The only thing I can say, we both did a community assessment. assessment report. You did yours on Westland also, yes. Right? Since we were residents, we did that last term as part of one of our public health classes. And I don't know how much the Westland, City of Westland website ties into this committee and what you're doing. But when I went on there to try and, we had to find resources for everything. You know, where's the water come from? Where's the power come from? You know, the emergency services. I really felt like there was a lack of representation for public health, social services, food banks. I couldn't find a lot of information on there about where do you go if you need mental health. I found a ton of stuff in Oregon City. I don't know if it's just because they're more of a hub and they have a lot of Department of Human Services Department buildings over there.
Because it's the county seat.
Yeah. I figured that there must be something to that, yes. But I don't know if there's a way that you guys can find a different, like, some way to link that information or if it was supposed to be on the website. But that's where I found a huge gap when I was searching for resources.
What was the timeline when you were searching?
A couple months ago.
So we're in the midst of the city of doing that new search for new
website, basically.
New website person.
Website.
And,
but
what was her title, the woman who left?
Courtney Flynn.
Yeah.
She left, and now there's a replacement that just started this
community
month.
Information officer?
Community relations coordinator.
So that's why you saw a gap. So the assistant city manager, has been trying to step into some of those gaps, but he didn't have the same bandwidth that she had.
Okay. It would be worthwhile if you had the time to come to a council meeting and there's public comment up to 5 minutes before we start the meeting, and so you can talk about anything. And so
yeah, as a resident, I'm going to make sure you guys know.
Yeah, I mean, you can come
if
and
I was a person
share.
That didn't have means and wasn't able to search around, I'm a sleuth. So I found all the things I needed, but it was not easy. But if I was a general community member, I think I would have given up and just said, there's nothing for me, and probably still not looked.
Now would be a particularly good time because they're in the process of updating, changing the website, because it has been deficient in a number of different ways.
It's not easy to search.
Right.
And even if you can't attend the council meeting, perhaps an email that you send to the councilman might get that information to the right person as well.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely took many more hours to complete the project just because I couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the things that may be available but I never could find, I just deferred and wrote, Oregon City has this reference.
My whole project was community resources in Oregon City for Westland residents because I think that, I mean, I struggled even to find, like, what the homeless population
is. Yeah, where
is
are the homeless?
West
where do they go? I really had a...
They sent them to Oregon City, right?
Well, I just learned that there's 53 students in our school district in West Lynn that are homeless.
Yes.
So that is, like, a real thing
yes.
that we don't necessarily think about. Yeah.
But even the food banks, they're really... I did find some churches down here in this
there's,
area, but
yeah,
it was really
more.
Hard to find them. From the website, I wouldn't have looked at
yeah.
Google.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I found when I was working to build the 211 system
mm-hmm.
in the state where I retired from, was a real conundrum between how robust should the cities, each individual city or community go versus this one-stop shopping approach
mm-hmm.
of the 211.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want folks to be thinking that way, just like we do the 911. I kind of get a sense that 211 hasn't really caught on here like it has in other other states.
It was a program goal of the United Way in Salem when I was down there, and it never really caught on.
Because it was really big and really robust where we were, but...
So speaking to what I believe Michael was saying about mental health, there is nothing on there that helps people define mental health needs
mm-hmm.
That I can remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Did you find anything?
No, nor substance use.
Yeah, so
issues.
I think that
which
is one thing that could be more helpful is if there was some sort of resource, you know, from a nursing perspective. Where do I go? What do? Who do I call?
Wasn't that our October presentation or November presentation where we talked about that
mental
program?
Health issue?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. But it was very, I mean, it's a service provided by the county that the city cooperates.
Right. As best
that has limited capacity.
That has very limited, limited. Yeah, it isn't specific to these small communities.
And like a lot of small communities, there is your mental health provider.
Because
it becomes violent or it becomes confrontational, and so.
But I think we probably should look more at an upstream type, you know, line of what can we do to prevent him from having to be the one to show up.
Mm-hmm. He'll just retire on us.
So just in case you're interested, from tonight, 6 o'clock at the Chambers is our next meeting. So if you wanted to do
tonight,
Monday's Tuesday.
Yeah, February 4th.
6 o'clock where?
At the Council Chambers right up on Salamo.
Oh, okay.
Right by the Safeway.
Sure, sure.
And the Starbucks is across the parking lot, and they're right there.
Yeah, if it hadn't had to have done that project, I probably would have never known that there was such a deficiency. And, I mean, I did find resources. It just was not as easy as I would have liked it to have been. Okay. Go here, and at least a phone number would have been present. It wouldn't have had all the information. But
well, there's a hunger resource page on the website, but the last time it was updated was July 2015.
I never even found that.
Okay. Is there any other comments? And if not, yes.
Just one little announcement. Another organization that I'm affiliated with, but it kind of dovetails with what we've been talking about, particularly driver safety, teen safety, is we put on a documentary film series kind of in the public interest. And the one coming up on February 10th, it'll be at the Lake Theater. We do Sundays at noon. It's a matinee. It's called Selling Your Soul, C-E-L-L-I-N-G. And it's a kind of brings out some of the growing body of knowledge and research on screen addiction. And we know that distracted driving is becoming a very, very serious piece to that. Now, I don't know if you get addicted to the guy when you're backing up, you know. Anyway, so I just wanted, you know, I'm trying to get the word out that will be available, and you know, you don't have to get advance tickets. It's donations.
Who's that through?
At the door.
Who's that through, the organization?
It's Independence for Progressive Action. IPA. We try to be fun. But mainly is we're a public interest group focused on the kind of, you know, the justices, environmental, social, racial, and safety.
Okay. Well, our next meeting should be Monday, February 25th. And if there is nothing else, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? I don't think there would be, but home, lunch, dinner, whatever it is. Where's the off button? There it is.